Atlas II Thematic Group 2, The Globalization of ICANN, Session 4, Hilton, Room 1-2.
Okay. I'm Mona Al-Ashkar. I'm a professor of university, professor of law from Lebanon. I'm the head of the Lebanese Information Technology Association and a member founder of the Pan-Arab Observatory for Cybersecurity and professor of internet law. I'm here to join, hopefully, the at-large community.
I'm sorry you weren't here earlier because we had all these legal issues that we were all accused of being lawyers, but now we have one more. But thank you for coming. So what we were told to do is find out something about somebody, something personal about the person on your left to share with the group, so we learn a little bit more about each person. I'm not sure if everybody did it, but why don't we start? Jury, you want to be the first to share? Yes, this is all going to be on the record.
On the record?
On the record.
Well, so Roberto plays the saxo very well, so maybe he will perform this Tuesday in the music night, or maybe not.
Is it the saxophone?
Yeah, right. And he lives in Vienna and likes biking.
Thank you.
So Mohammed has two daughters, 3 years and 4 years old. Two children, 3 years and 4 years old. In fact, I'm not. Loves going to the desert when he has some free time and enjoy the silence and the nature and. That's it.
Thank you. Mohammed, you going to share something about an absent member?
Yeah. Vittorio is he's a council member of the city of Torino, and he's very politically active. I'm not sure about the children family yet, but that's...
He's single.
Yeah, he's single. I think that's
it. Personal. Thank you.
He hasn't been in here as far as.
Can you introduce yourself? Thank you.
Hi, my name is Vinay Kesri. I'm here as an observer. I'm from India, and I work as an advisor to the National Internet Exchange of India, NICSI. I'm a lawyer by training.
Yeah. Lance, do you have anything personal to that you learned from the person who had been on your left? So,
I got a break because I'm recording.
I can whisper to him.
Okay, well, Lance, you must know something about Carlton that we don't know. So, Sylvia, you don't have anything about Tijani for us?
We need to speak.
Okay, well.
So Yuri loves running and swimming, and he will get married next month. So he's a happy man.
So I'm afraid I have to report that I didn't manage to get to know Mona in the roughly 5 minutes that I had any more than what she already said when she introduced herself. So I'm going to have to skip.
Alan, did you get any personal information from the person who had been on your left?
I did. The person who was on my left isn't in the room at the moment.
That's okay.
He's Neil Schwartzberg. Schwartzman. And he comes from Montreal, Quebec, and he is a spam fighter, but mostly he's actually a musician, certainly an internet activist with a great deal of knowledge. There wasn't very much else that I managed to get out of him. I can tell you more about the person on my right. I can tell you more about the person on my left now. Jyri is from Finland. He's one of the very youngest members of ISOC Finland, and he's been taken the initiative. I think I'd like to commend him for joining ISOC, which is an aging community in Finland. And he's been, you know, taken the initiative to join Finland, and they've certainly, I think, taken the opportunity to use him to bring more of the youth into ISOC Finland, and that's certainly one of the challenges that we have in South Africa as well. So I look forward to learning more from Jyri as well.
Thank you. Yasuchi?
Yeah.
Did you learn anything about Garth?
Sorry, this is my first time I met with him at yesterday, so I'm sorry, I don't know well about it, but it looks like he's an expert over here. Is that it?
Yeah, and when I told you about the Boy Scouts.
Yeah?
Eagle Scout. Boy Scouts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
something about scouts. So, yeah, Garth, you tell us. I think
Eagle Scout?
Yeah. Eagle Scout.
Yeah. But I don't know well, but sorry.
That's okay.
So I've known Seth since the Mexico City Atlas meeting, and Seth brings a real calming presence to a room that might get heated, and maybe it's made this room too cold. I don't know, but Seth's wife is originally from Stuttgart, Germany, and they live in Hawaii. And Seth used to drive a cab in New York City, and he used to teach law in Malaysia. Did I get that right? All right.
Thank you. And Jordy. Do I have the name right? So Jordy has two daughters and a cat, and the cat has an email address, cat@cat.cat. Now, that last part is just a little bit exaggerated. Anyway, thank you all for coming back. We have a little bit of time left to finish up. We're still discussing point five. I think we made considerable inroads, and instead of taking each of the five subtopics separately, because I think they're interrelated, maybe we can just discuss them together. We were talking about the footprint. The second bullet is communication privileging specific local communities, linguistic, geopolitical. That, I think, relates a little bit to what we've already discussed in topic one, I think it was. Are users worldwide given the same opportunities to contact ICANN? We've already discussed that somewhat in terms of location of offices, time zones, language. Is access to ICANN's facilities, physical or online, equal to all stakeholders? And the last subtopic is, are ICANN operations sufficiently shielded from local jurisdictions to survive a change of political attitude? And we haven't really discussed that last point very much, although we have somewhat in terms of its location and the laws that apply. I'll just start it off with one comment. I don't find ICANN accessible necessarily, in the sense that if you need to reach somebody in an office, for example.
Sorry, Chair. We are dealing with the fourth bullet point now?
Well, I was suggesting we deal with them all together.
Right, okay.
Because we only have a little time left.
Okay, but you began discussing which one, the fourth bullet point?
Yeah, but I guess access to ICANN facilities, physical and online, and this is an impression I have. I don't know if it's true, but like many internet, like many entities engaged in internet commerce, they don't make themselves accessible physically, and or by telephone. that communications are substantially, if not exclusively, by email or internet, and particularly like trying to get the travel constituency to respond can be a challenge. I don't think there's a phone number. So to start off this part of the discussion, perhaps everybody's equally disadvantaged in terms of accessing the facilities. But do we have comments on any of the four bullet points, or in particular accessing facilities? Okay, Alan and then Garth.
Hi, this is Alan Levine. I was thinking after the previous discussion that we had, there was this kind of understanding that ICANN is supposed to be like, you know, have a call center type environment for various types of customer queries. And I was just, you know, trying to understand why there's that a perception that ICANN needs to have any kind of call center. I mean, I do understand that it needs to service people in different time zones. And I don't think that there's any physical way. I mean, we're talking about some kind of physical way that we can remove time zones. But I think the way that the planet works and the sun rotates, the Earth rotates around the sun, that we're not actually going to get away from time zones. But at the end of the day, I would rather, you know, wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and talk to the person that I need to talk to than, you know, talk to some intermediary who isn't really the right person to talk to and use an intermediary to communicate with the right person to talk to. And you know, in the ICANN business, from what I understand, the only real business aspects when you need to talk to somebody in ICANN at an operational level is if there is a money transaction. So if you're a registry, then you get to talk to ICANN. Registrars generally talk to registries after they have been accredited as registrars. So there's a once-off time when registrars need to communicate with ICANN at operational level. And well, the beauty of ICANN is that they travel around the world and they meet in different parts of interesting parts of the world, you know, three times a year. So there's a good chance that sometime in the next 6 months they're going to be at a fairly close location. We'll be able to physically meet with a person, which is nice. And when you're going through a registrar accreditation process, that's usually a useful thing. So I think it's great that ICANN travels around the world. It doesn't have to have offices in every place in the world, does travel around the world. And registries maybe have a more frequent need for support directly with ICANN, but my understanding is that that's more an interaction with IANA. So, you know, if we actually look down at the details of the operations of ICANN, when do you have to have a telephonic discussion? When does it need to go off email? So, you know, let's understand what are the actual business interactions that need to go, that need to have face-to-face or telephonic or email communications. If that's what we want to analyze about the globalization of ICANN, then we need to understand when are those touch points needed. Again, I reiterate that if it's outreach, that's something that we signed up for. That's our job, not ICANN's job. And I think when ICANN disintermediates me, I miss the opportunity to gauge the end user's position and thoughts and ideas, interact with them, and understand how to represent their interests when it comes to policymaking.
Well, just while you asked the question, I quickly went to ICANN's website to try and maybe gauge this. And I immediately see up at the top, we have links for French, Spanish, Arabic, Russian, and Chinese. But if I click on any of these, the navigation at the top of the page and the bottom of the page is still in English. So if you actually wanted to get any information in any of those languages, you still wouldn't be able to. The only thing that's translated is just an introductory page that's in one of those five other languages. And then in terms of being able to contact the organization, there is a menu at the bottom that says Contact Us. But it lists specifically security team, PGP keys, certificate authority, registry liaison, AOC review, organizational reviews, request to speaker, and for journalists. There's nothing in there for an internet user. No, I would say it is because the person who comes to approaches this thinking that they're going to be able to get some sort of, you know, global method of contacting ICANN is thwarted on two levels. There's nothing, they don't get very far with the language accessibility, and there's nothing inviting them to actually contact anybody in a useful way. Those contact lists there are really for industry and nobody else.
Yeah, Mohammed, for the record, I just wanted to stress Gar's point. Because if you look also to the website, I mean, it's just the intro. Although ICANN pays lots of money for translating the documents up to 5 UN languages, those documents are not accessible online. So basically, ICANN is wasting its money. And it's that wealth of information is not available, it's not searchable, it's not there. So where it goes, really. So this is very, very critical. And the contacts, yes, it's for the security operations, yes, for emergencies, that's required. But I just want to remind others, if they're involved with CCTLD operations or registries operations, sometimes there is critical incidents that require immediate response. That's required a phone number, which is you can talk to someone immediately. It's not someone, you send an email to security ops, and yes, John Crane, yes, might be, he's always awake to respond, but that's not what's required. I mean, so at different levels, there's issues about really conveying, sending the, or providing the information in the different languages, which is ICANN captures in reality, but if they're not disseminated. And also the contact, really to have contacts, maybe because different regions, there's different preferences of the way of communication. In some part of the world, people prefer oral communication than writing emails to communicate. So I think that needs to be taken into consideration.
It's just a couple of additions to what previous people have said. I think that this is Roberto speaking. Referring to Gath, it's we are evaluating the thing globally, not just linguistically. He has mentioned that it's going to be difficult that some parts of the web are not correctly translated. But in terms of contact points, who is penalized is a category of stakeholders because there's no reference for that stakeholders. So I think that those are two distinct problems. One is related to the language, is a barrier for the language, and the other is an obstacle for the type of stakeholder. The combination of the two can be very disruptive, because if you are a user who doesn't speak English, then in that case you are completely lost. And I would like to link this to some of the discussions that we have been having over year, in terms of the who is. And that, to a certain extent, links to what Mohammed was saying. We require the who is because in certain situations we need to have a sort of the possibility to contact a person that is responsible. And I think that we should apply the same rule to ICANN, in the sense that accessing the website, it should be extremely clear and not having to navigate page after page after page to find out this information. But in case you have you need to contact ICANN for whatever reason, you need to get the possibility to have this without language barrier and without a barrier of other type in terms of globalization. And the last thing is in terms of what Alan has said, and you might be surprised, but in fact I agree with you. I'm in the sense that although I basically think that ICANN has to enlarge the footprint and making it more accessible geographically and in all this, I think that we have to be extremely careful in identifying for what purpose we do this and what are the functions that need to be localized. Because otherwise, if we just make a big thing, then we take the risk of investing a lot of money without having the return on investment in terms of benefit. So I have to rectify what I was saying before, being a champion of enlarging the footprint of ICANN. I still think that we have to do it, but I take your point that we have to be careful in using our scarce resources to do the things that are really needed, and not to do that just to tick off something off a box, tick off a box and say we have done it.
No comment, but I will...
You have to identify yourself.
Oh, again, okay. It's Mona. And sorry, I forgot to say that I'm a member of the Francophone group. Actually, I agree with the two of you, but ICANN is global in the sense that it concerns all the world. It's running the world infrastructure and responsible for security, stability, wherever. So, since it concerns all the world, it has to work to reach all of the world and to enlarge the its footprint, be it in language or the way to communicate with it. And maybe, I don't know, it could take the example of other organization, like what is happening in, let's say, in the air traffic market or whatever. So they can get closer to communities all over the world. I think it's needed.
Yasushi?
Yep. Thank you. My name is Yasushi Kitamura from the ISOC JP. And the one related thing is as all of you know, some countries is prohibiting to access the Facebook at their countries. So sometimes the ICANN is strongly promoting to access the Facebook or Twitter or some of the things. But unfortunately, so those are the target of prohibiting those countries. So in such case, we need to think of if we think of the globalization is another item, but anyway, so that if we think of the unified service for of ICANN to the worldwide, so that sometimes we have to think of the how to use such the social media. So if not, so that we can access the Facebook, but it's not that true if we. If we make the promotion at the Facebook, that all the people can access there, that's not true. So that's a racist thing. Not only the ICANN, but all the Facebook accessing and also all the Twitter. So that's up. Even if the ICANN is makes a promotion at the Facebook, those people can't access those contents.
So Seth reads for the transcript record. I think the point being made here is that ICANN has to be sensitive that it may be using modes of communication that doesn't channels of communication that doesn't reach certain geographic areas. So they have to be aware of ICANN needs to be aware of that and perhaps take measures to compensate. I think you want
Tijani and then
Garth.
Tijani speaking. Seth, you made the point because at the beginning I didn't understand what he said. I think that all those points we spoke about this morning and even yesterday, I don't think that we will add anything if we continue discussing like this. Perhaps we have to summarize what we already said, and if there is something missing, we can continue.
Seth Reese for the transcript record. The concern Tijani expressed is that we don't want to find ourselves at the end of this session with a lot of thoughts that haven't been brought together. And so it's important because all of us spent a lot of time and effort to come here and have a fruitful discussion. We want to make sure that discussion is put forth in a report that reflects the work we've done. So, Garth?
It's Garth. I think what... Yasuchi said is very important, and it goes right to the question. I mean, this is sort of a prejudice, is this assumption that just because, you know, people in Europe and the United States and elsewhere can access Twitter and Facebook that everybody else can too. And I think that's a bad assumption to make. And I also think it's not necessarily good practice for ICANN to invite people in only to send them to a different website. They should be able to do everything on ICANN. I don't see why that should be so difficult. And I think we mentioned this in a previous meeting, maybe a few different times, is that instead of translating all languages for everything, at least start with maybe a bar on the website that has 50 languages in smaller type that simply says, I speak blah in each of the languages. And as people come to the website, they can click on that. And then they would start to get an idea of how many visitors they have who speak these different languages. It's just a way of recording and polling that.
Yeah, just Mohammed, for the record, just wanted to make sure that the discussion we had in the morning and yesterday regarding accessibility and ICANN is not taking enough consideration to different segments of the society, because we had a lengthy discussion about that and people's disabilities. I think that need to be captured in this point, because we're talking about physical facilities as well. I'm not sure how that could be in the report, but that point not just to be missed. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Seth Reese for the transcript record. I guess we haven't really talked about the last subtopic in 5, which is, are ICANN operations sufficiently shielded from local jurisdiction? I don't know if we need to talk about that more, but does anybody want to address that at this time? Garth?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there may be a fight brewing. I don't know how serious the fight is within the U.S. legislature. There are certain people in the United States who are extremely opposed to the IANA transition. I don't know how far they're going to get with that. I don't think they're going to storm ICANN's headquarters. But that's certainly something that could happen somewhere at some point.
Okay. So I take it we're not shielded now.
I don't know if you ever can be.
Carlton?
Carlton Simons, for the record, I'm picking up on Gart's point. Yes, there are elements in the United States policy framework that are opposed to the transition, and I don't know if they're going to succeed or not. We can't, I would make book on it. But the same thing exists in areas where ICANN is trying to globalize, and they're putting offices and so on inside there. The way we try to deal with that in the business situation, called business continuity, we have a failover plan. And what the failover plan for ICANN, I don't know, you pick up and move to someplace else, or you find alternate paths or channels to do the things that you normally would do if that is happening. But I think, to Gart's point, I don't think that we could seriously talk about shielding here without, because we don't know to the extent of which any action from any country is going to degrade ICANN's operations.
Another country. Sorry. This might also be a point where there might be political concerns, maybe more so than the IANA transition. So any other comments about this last point? Please.
Well, I think one model that could be considered is... Sorry, my name is Vinay Kesari. I think one model that could be considered is, that followed by the ICRC, the Red Cross, the Red Crescent, and so on, which, even though they aren't intergovernmental organizations set up by treaty, they still enjoy certain immunities in the jurisdiction where they're physically present. So that sort of model is one that could be considered, because as a couple of people have pointed out, ICANN currently is a U.S. nonprofit corporation, so it is entirely subject to the laws of the United States. And if we're talking about a model where ICANN continues to remain an independent organization, the only models that at least I'm aware of which exist, which allow for certain levels of immunity from local jurisdiction, are the examples of ICRC and a couple of similar organizations.
It's Carlton Samuels for the record. Actually, it's a little bit more complex than that, because we've had that discussion. Garth knows about this over several moons now. In most countries where the Red Cross, Red Crescent operate, they are circumscribed by local law. For example, all of the Caribbean, there is a law that called the Red Cross Act that actually says what it is that the Red Cross gets from operating in the country, and what immunities, if you want to say immunities, but what rights and responsibilities are associated with their being in the country. So it requires an affirmative vote in the legislature to get the most of that. So it's a little bit more complex than that. We have one model across the Caribbean, English-speaking Caribbean. I can speak authoritatively on that. But in other places in the world where we've looked at it, and again, God, we've had this discussion before, there are slight differences, slight changes. So it might bear that in mind.
In those jurisdictions, this is Seth Rees for the transcript record, in those jurisdictions, what stops the local legislature from changing the law after the entity is taken home there?
Carlton Samuels again for the record. Nothing, actually. It's all good. It's all about goodwill. It's all about goodwill. The idea is that the Red Cross tends to do good work, and they engage themselves in the areas where politicians normally show up after the fact, which is to say in disasters. So for most politicians, they see the Red Cross as a very important part of their political outreach objective, and that is why they get some traction in the legislatures.
Seth Rees for the transcript record. If we adopted the model that was discussed in a couple of the other points where there was more than one corporate entity in more than one region? Would that address this last issue? Because if there was a political takeover in one region, we would survive in another. Lance?
Just a question, and maybe Carlton. The concept of branches, but I suppose the branch would still have to subscribe to local law. Mm. But certainly a model that says, well, all right, the head office or the headquarters are liable, but this is your operational office in the various regions.
Look, this is Carlton.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I have to take one.
Carlton, for the record. Yes, that was what Seth was asking. You could have a situation where you had corporate, and I'm using the term now advisedly, corporate headquarters in one place, and then you have operational branches around, but you still would. The way I see that working, Seth, is that it gives you an infrastructure that you can use for failover operations. So I agree with you. If I were, say, operating in Hong Kong and I got shut down there, then maybe I could start doing Hong Kong operations from Sydney. Or if I were in Geneva and I got shut down there, I could move to Istanbul. So I see that infrastructure as probably a useful one if you were going to have failover operations.
And I think some of the suggestions went beyond just operational, but to actual institutional headquarters in more than one country. So you would have, and I think somebody analogized this to the commercial model where a multinational corporation has different corporations in different countries in order to operate legally and more effectively. So, jury?
This is Yuri Sovret for the transcript. I just wanted to point out that the commercial analogy may not be the best. This from a technical perspective. I'm an engineer, so the whole domain name system is based on everyone accepting a single root for the domain name system. And in pretty much any case where the main functions would be moved from one country to another country, the corporate analogy, a corporate might move all its businesses and all its customer relationships to one place, but it's much more analogous to having a Dalai Lama. So when the Dalai Lama is no more welcome in Tibet and moves to another country, then the local authorities bring up another challenging Dalai Lama, and then everyone has to choose which one they believe in. So that's something that's a point where the corporate analogies don't really work when we're dealing with what ICANN is dealing.
This is Alan Levine. I'm so disappointed that we've actually reduced ourselves to discussing ICANN, the corporation, and how it operates. I really feel that as at-large and an at-large structure, we need to talk about ICANN at the multi-stakeholder, technical coordination, policy-making level. Why are we getting involved in the money issues? I don't believe it's an at-large discussion.
This is Mohammed for the record. I disagree with Alan. It's important we talk about this because it will affect internet users in different jurisdictions, even operationally. I'll tell you one example. The United States as a kind of country have trade embargoes in certain countries. And ICANN is incorporated in the United States, in California. ICANN is bound by those trade embargo laws legally. ICANN, or the U.S. government, Department of Commerce, maybe in a good faith, did not turn down any request for changes on the IANA function, on the route for any of the CCLDs on those countries. But even individuals at-large members, ISOC members of those countries, I can need to get permissions for them to get supported. So that's even affecting not just registries or institutions, it's affecting end users as well. Because someone from, let's say, Sudan, Iran, North Korea, Cuba, might not be supported to come here to this meeting because ICANN is not able to pay them, because ICANN need to get a permission from the U.S. government Office of Foreign Sanctions to pay this $500 or $701,000 to that end user. So it's if we go down, it's there's implications for those issues operationally at the business constitution, at the registries, and individually. So that's why it's important, the debate about this.
Yeah. I'm Vittorio, and I just wanted to add that this is one of the main reasons why many international organizations are based in Switzerland, because Switzerland is basically almost never at war with anyone, so they have no issues with embargoes or...
This is Alan. In response, I just want to know, so how did ICANN pay you to come here?
Okay. I can not pay me for this one, but I can give you the solutions. Two cases. One, for example, ISOC chapter in Sudan, where ISOC itself need to go to a process for 2 years to get exemption to deal financially with that chapter. This is a process that has happened, and I was involved in that, trying to support that. For individuals coming from those countries, I can need to apply, get a permission for a certain period of time to allow them to support that individual. That could be for 1 year term. Let's say if I'm sitting on a CCNSO council position, which is I was in that position, they need to get me an exemption for 3 years period if they're going to support me. And that's the same for others as well. So I know colleagues have their fellowship programs application, after has been successful, has been turned down, or they were not able to travel to attend ICANN because of those restrictions. So that's the reality. That's ICANN knows that very well. They acknowledge that, and they acknowledge that this is due to being liable to the jurisdiction that they incorporated in. Yeah, so this is a reality. Yeah. This is something that's happening.
Seth Reese for the transcript record. I think one thing, if you're on the issuing side of a sanction, you don't know how it impacts the other side unless somebody tells you, and that's why I was oblivious to these impacts, and that's why this dialogue is so important, so you can educate us in terms of, you know, how ICANN being incorporated in California impacts many things that those of us on the other side aren't aware of. So thank you. So we're now going to summarize everything we've done from yesterday till today, which is not going to be easy. Tijani, do you want to give us some guidance or suggestions in terms of... I have to be honest, I've never done this before in terms of the summarizing part. So maybe you can give us some guidance.
Tijani speaking. Those are not guidance, but I think that Carlton and Lance took the notes, so we have the material now to do our summaries, to do our draft, if you want. I think that we agreed about the past part of the material they take. We have to agree now about what we did this afternoon, and then I think that we have to go on drafting, because we don't have time. We need to begin drafting.
Seth Rees for the Transcript Record. Just so everybody understands, we're going to be drafting a report, and the report will be turned into the Atlas, and they will be taking that report and producing a final report with our contribution. So I know that Lance and Carlton will be working on the report. Tijani offered to assist. Oh, Jury, I'm sorry I didn't see that. Did you want to make a comment?
I just realized I had my name tag up, and I turned it down because I didn't want to talk. Thank you.
So that'll be the process. If anybody has it involves a lot of work over the next few days. I think we'll be turning in the report the middle of the week probably, because I think the final report is coming out Thursday. If anybody has a burning desire to assist with the drafting or the revising, you can let me know. Vittorio?
I guess that now we have notes from discussion, so maybe some of the people or the rapporteurs can prepare a draft and then circulate it by email so that everyone can make comments.
And I'm sorry? Sure, please, Carlton.
Carlton, for the record, we do two things. We can always circulate the raw draft notes by mail. We can get together, me and Lance and whoever else, and draft a report, like you say, and circulate that. So you will have the raw notes that you can look, and the raw notes are provided to you for revision and extension, because what we do is that we try to take notes of who's saying what. So you'll see your name prefacing every line in the report. And if it's something that you thought that we didn't catch that you said, you can always revise and extend it and send it back to us. So that's the reason for providing the raw notes. And what we will do is that we will go ahead and create a draft report, which is our sense, listening to the distillation of all of the issues of what the report would cover, and we will circulate that again for revision and extension. And hopefully we'll have that done by latest tomorrow afternoon, yeah? We will send the draft notes now to the whole group. So you have so please understand, if you find that there's anything that the raw notes did not capture that you said, it's your opportunity to revise and extend. And I use revise and extend, I believe, advisedly. So make sure you do that. Thank you.
Tijani?
Tijani speaking. I think that this approach is absolutely good. The drafting, I think that the reporters were chosen because of their skill in the language and the sentences of the ideas, etc. So normally we will have the raw data you will send. If there is something to correct, you will do. In the meantime, I think that if you start drafting, you have only to correct something if there is something to correct. And then the first draft you do, you can circulate it, and we can, or if you want, we can have some time to sit together and but the drafting is, you are the best one to draft it.
So maybe I'd like to understand exactly what Tijani was saying. So he's suggesting you skip the first step and go ahead with a draft?
No, he's suggesting we run it concurrently. See, we've done it before, so you can't wait until I get hear back from you. So I'll start drafting, because we have to put it out for you by tomorrow afternoon to have a draft. So I will not wait for you to come back to me from the raw notes. I will start drafting, and you will send the notes, and you send back the notes to me if there's something substantive to change to make, then I'll make it then. And then me and Lance would kind of begin to do the report from now. We're not going to wait until you come back to us. Okay?
So, and first of all, I want to thank in advance all the hard work that Lance and Carlton would be doing, because I think that they'll end up with the bulk of the work, and we all benefit from that. So we appreciate it. And Tijani, I'm glad you understand the process and will be assisting too. And I guess it's up to all of us to be responsive. So, you know, keep in mind that if we don't pay attention and give Carlton feedback quickly, he won't be able to take our feedback that may come later on. So I encourage everybody to do that. So let's go ahead and summarize this last point five. And Lance, do you want to summarize your notes on that? And I'll give you my 2 pages of.
Going to start at question five, operational matters. And the first point of discussion was whether ICANN's footprint, global footprint, covers the global internet community on an equal footing. There seems to be agreement that the global footprint does cover, but there is still work to be done and there are some issues that need to be addressed. There was discussions about opening offices in other geographic areas, especially those that are unrepresented. A concern was raised that the cost of that or the opening of offices is an expensive exercise, and some thought should be given to, and Alan, I hope I got this correctly, the expansion of the virtual world to help with this process. Okay, so you want to go?
Well, I don't agree with what you said, Sopo.
I don't think that's consensus.
I think Roberto put a consensus position that before we can make any kind of judgments on expanding into different nations, we need to understand for what purpose.
Okay, that's there as well.
I think that would be a consensus position.
Okay.
John?
Yes, if I understood well, Roberto, and I will not speak on his behalf, but I thought that he said, I do want to expand the footprint of ICANN, but not only to expand it. We have to expand it and knowing why we are doing so. So he's thinking about the functions.
Right. So in support of that, there is a need to define the strategy for opening the offices.
Roberto wanted to.
Yeah, it's just a fact. I don't think that, it's better to provide a result that where we all agree and when we put the issue, instead of trying to give an answer that to the problem that we don't have consensus on. That's my approach. So I think that definitely, there is an issue about expanding the footprint of ICANN. There's also an issue about not doing this just for the purpose of doing it. And right now, I don't think that if we have right now to say, these are the things that we need to do, we just have no time to flesh it out, and there's no consensus we cannot make a bullet point list of things for which the footprint has to be the functions for which the footprint it will be worth it to extend the footprint. So I think that we can say there is a general issue, and we can give the recommendation that we do this carefully and not just for doing that.
Alan and Mohammed.
I think it's a question of putting the cart before the horse. I take that Mohammed's point about being able to put pay monies to embargoed countries of the U.S. I was given an opportunity to question that, but that is the only point that I've heard as a reason to expand the footprint of ICANN. That's a valid reason.
I don't understand why they couldn't pay you out of Brussels. I'm sure there aren't embargoes to pay from the Brussels office to any of these 13 countries. I don't know why they couldn't make a plan like that. I think we need to get to the bottom of that story as to how that can be diverted. But that's really the first problem or the first reason why, a valid reason why I believe that we need to expand the footprint of ICANN. So and before we can agree to expand the footprint of ICANN, I think we need to have real valid reasons and understand why it needs to be done. We can't say it needs to be done, and as long as it's done with real reasons, it must be done. We must first understand what those real reasons are before we can all agree that it must be done.
Mohammed, for the record, I think it's as we did yesterday, we're trying to raise the issues when we were discussing the bylaws and does it conflict with national laws. And we carefully said that ICANN need to investigate this in the light of those issues. The same here applies. Those issues are known for a long time. It's not just the issues of the trade embargoes. The issue is also about being liable to a single government jurisdiction. And the whole ITU, the whole issues about internet governance is actually emerging from this principle of ICANN is not global enough to be treated as and have a global mandate, and for the legacy reasons that's the situation now. So the issues of countries under embargo is very clear to ICANN. There is no solution to that, even try to use any of their other offices, because they incorporated in the US. They're not incorporated in Istanbul, or they're not at the end, it's the U.S. incorporated entity, and it have to abide by the law there. I think it's important that we list the issues. I think that's the discussion that here. The options, those are options and recommendations from our side. We heard options about being incorporated in a jurisdiction that, let's say, globally known to be like Geneva. Geneva is a good example we mentioned yesterday. Why I think it's all the international organization, government, non-government, they're based in Geneva, because it's a country that have a track record of being neutral. There is no issues, political issues. So those are the consideration that we need to list to, at least need to be considered to ICANN. And that's why this is important. We should not forget that the issue, there is lots of issues coming from this. There's set of, let's say, options, and we need to list them. I don't think why we should shy from that. Why should and carefully? I mean, those options, ICANN need to consider them. ICANN will do their research, thorough, deep analysis of the impact, implication of those. They're not going to just follow our recommendation blindly, isn't it? So I think we need to not shy from those. Those are critical issues. Been there for a long time. People don't need to talk about it. From bylaws changes, if required, if they review that, to the level of incorporation. Because currently what we're seeing, what Roberto is saying, that ICANN is want to be converted to an international matrix organization in terms of functions. But that does not resolve the main issue, even after IANA transition. Even the discussion in the morning. So and basically there's issues, global issues that need to be handled. I'm not sure how that could be resolved. I'm not sure really, but it's issues need to be, I think, put on the surface. We cannot even as a community longer just defend the model without stating what are the issues. We need to be clear about that. Yeah.
Okay, I think that it's very difficult to say that we have consensus on something. The fact that we don't have consensus on a fully detailed solution doesn't mean that we cannot say in the report that we can that we have discussed this and that we believe that this matter has to be investigated. The reason why I'm saying this is that while I think that I will not be able to convince you about a list of five or six reasons why the footprint has to be enlarged. I would also disagree on the fact that we don't mention at all the extension of the footprint, because I will not agree on the fact that there is no problem. You see, I can tell you just quickly two or three things. First of all, there's an issue of perception of the local communities that always we hear this. ICANN is a U.S. organization based on blah blah blah. There is an issue. I agree that we can communicate by email, that the technology and all what you want, but direct communication via phone call is still in some part of the world the prevailing element, and for having this, you need to have two things. You need to have somebody answering the phone on the other side at a reasonable cost for the caller in a time zone that suits the time zone of the caller, and not in the middle of the night. You cannot oblige people to call at midnight because they are making a call to California. And also to have the possibility of answering, of having a reply within a reasonable time in the language of the caller. That can be done from California, but you need to accumulate there a series of skills of languages and so on. So there are many of these things. I don't think we are not having, in my opinion, a workshop specifically on extending the footprint. We can discuss a couple of days on this and then come to a conclusion. At this point in time, I agree with you that it is not something where we have consensus on. We cannot make the blank statement. ICANN needs to have a presence in at least three countries for every region and so on. We are not there, but I think that there is the general feeling that at least that we need to evaluate this and evaluate what will be the benefit of extending the footprint and what will be the cost of extending the footprint and identify in which cases this could be beneficial. At the end of this exercise, we might end up with the result that there is no benefit. But at least I would like to try to convince you that we can achieve a consensus on the fact that we need to recommend to investigate the issue.
And stop for a second. What we had done is that we had actually taken as much as we can the direct quotes from the participants in the room. So I think we're at the point where we're making concrete suggestions in terms of the way forward. So what I've heard so far is the need for ICANN to open regional offices, but with a clear strategy, because ICANN can't open in every location. The possibility of ICANN relocating to a more neutral location. There was, coming out of the notes earlier, there was a conversation about the possibility of the ALS taking on some of the responsibilities in local jurisdictions. There was some discussion about that because there was some talk about ALS. That's not necessarily the ALS's function. And ICANN be sensitive to the fact that social media is sometimes blocked by governments, and ICANN ensuring that translations are available in a timely manner. Those are some of the things that are coming, that came out of the discussion today. Now, I don't know whether that is what we're going to encapsulate in the report, or we want to cherry pick from this and come to a position.
Okay, Vittorio and Tijani, and then maybe Roberto can respond to that.
Okay.
I know we're doing this in a fragmented manner. Roberto,
I thought I heard you suggesting what the report would look like, and I think Lance is looking for some guidance.
Okay.
Is that right, Lance?
Yeah, to some extent. Just, you know.
And I think that's right, because we want to provide you that guidance so you do your job well. Roberto, you want to give some feedback?
Yes, I think that as a general rule, I would say we are spending 9 hours in this, and there are some ideas that came out. On some ideas, we have consensus, and that can be clearly shown as a consensus. On some ideas, we don't have consensus, but I think that it will be a pity if we don't put them in the report, making it clear that there is no consensus. So I would rather leave more things there with the clear marking that there's no consensus, but the issue has been raised, rather than saying there's no consensus, we delete that from the final report.
So as I understand the suggestion, and Alan will get to you, as you're writing the report, we will mention everything as you just presented it, but only those points where most or all people seem to agree will you characterize it as consensus. And so I think as you're doing this and we're giving you feedback, hopefully those things will become clear, because it isn't always clear when there's consensus, but sometimes it will be fairly clear.
Just one thing I'm adding. I think we have reported yesterday in the notes that you wrote, we have reported what Alan has said in terms of we don't really need a legal framework because we are our bylaws, we are above the national laws. Honestly, I don't think that there's a consensus on what you have said, but I agree on the fact that that has to be in the report, because it is one opinion that has been stated. At the same way, I would like to push the idea that we talk about the footprint, the enlargement of the footprint, even if there's no consensus, because that is something that came out from the discussion. I think that we are not a deciding body, and it will be a waste of resources if one idea comes up, and just because there's no consensus, it is abandoned.
Thank you. So Tijani and Mohammed, and then Alan.
Tijani speaking. There is three levels of consensus. There is first no consensus, second rough consensus, and finally full consensus. There is also, if there is a rough consensus, if there is consensus, it is not a full consensus. We can add to that a minority opinion, so that the report reflect everything was done in the group. So I think that we do have to use our color cards to have a straw poll, if you want, and to know where is the consensus. Do we have full consensus? Do we have rough consensus?
Okay, Mohammed,
for the record, I second Tijani's point. I feel that in the room there is some sort of a consensus. You want it to be measured? Happy with that.
Thanks. I agree with everybody's points here. I think before we start voting on what's consensus or full consensus, we have to have stuff in writing. And so I don't want to go there. But right now, just as with regards to above, we are above the law, I love the way that Carlton separated ICANN, the corporation, from ICANN, the global multi-stakeholder technical coordination policy entity. When I'm talking about we're above the law, it's on the latter, not the former. So I think it's very important that we minute and document those separate. That's been acknowledged. But I'd really like to make a practical suggestion here. One thing that I've heard is that there seems to be a perception that a telephone number to call, a local telephone number to call, may be helpful.
And I think that there is acknowledgement that at as an ALS, we have a commitment to do outreach. You know, that there's like the old saying that when you point at somebody, we're pointing at ICANN here, we're suggesting to point at ICANN to create somebody to call at a local time that can speak the local language in a locally understandable fashion, whether it's someone to call or instant message or whatever. Three fingers point back at you. The way that you point, one goes forward, three comes back. Now, I personally volunteer my ALS, my telephone number of our ALS, to put on the ICANN website. Should any YEND users have any kind of need for answering questions or support or anything, and a feedback mechanism back to ICANN as to how effective I was as an ALS in answering their ICANN question. And I challenge you all as ALSs who've been funded by ICANN, who agreed to do ICANN outreach in exchange back for ICANN. Now, I can tell you, as an ISOC chapter, I've got way more support from ICANN than I ever got from ISOC Global. I'm a much better friend of ICANN than I am ISOC Global. Much. And I want to help ICANN. And I challenge you all, please. I want to put my number on ICANN's website for any South African that wants any information about ICANN. I guarantee I'll be able to give it in a very great fashion. I want them to be able to get feedback on that, because I know that's what ICANN's asking about us as ALSs. So let's go back to them with a really good practical suggestion that if they want to know how good we're working, tell the users on their website to contact us and ask us. And we can gauge also, we get in touch with our users as well at the same time.
Yes, Carlton, for the record, thank you, Seth. What I wanted to say is that maybe before we decide on the consensus and the voting, we have a draft consensus. Let me tell you what the approach has been. We've used it before in 2009, and it's the kind of practice that we have in writing reports of this nature. We will always lay out the arguments against the questions that we have. And where there are interesting observations we make, we will flag them so that people have a sense to do it. We will never decide in the report unless you all agree what is consensus or not. That's not our job. Our job is to report as concisely as possible the discussions, and then we give it to you and you decide what it is that we're going to label. So we don't label. We simply report. And it's this group that then does the labeling. So rest assured, we're not going to say there was consensus here. We're not going to do that. We're simply going to marshal the arguments as best as we can remember them and summarize them and then present it to all of us as a group to decide what the consensus is. Carlton, you can do round robin. We don't have a issue with that. People can always round robin and make a notation, and we can decide that.
Thank you, Vittorio Bertola. Well, I'm fine with this, but I actually wanted to point out that the question we are being asked is not whether ICANN's footprint should be expanded. Actually, we are being asked whether ICANN's footprint is covering the global internet community on equal footing. And I guess there's full consensus, I'd say, that it's not. Then, of course, there's disagreement on whether, I mean, the way to solve that is to opening more offices or maybe doing something else. But at least on the fact that, I mean, ICANN is not covering the global internet community on equal footing, I think that's full consensus. And maybe we could recommend also some data-driven approach to this, so that there is a sort of, as far as possible, measurement of which parts of the internet community are not well covered, because there's a lot of impressions. And if you ask to the different constituencies, each and every constituency will say, I'm not being covered well, and ICANN is doing more for the others than they are doing for me. So there needs to be some process to gain an objective evaluation of which are the weak points in terms of coverage, both in geographical coverage and stakeholders' coverage, and whatever. So apart from this, I'm fine. I think that it will be easier if we get the draft report or draft summarization or whatever, and then maybe we can propose consensus points and see whether in a round of email whether someone agrees or disagrees and we have a consensus or not.
Sylvia, am I correct? We're almost out of time. Is that right? I'm not miscalculating, am I? No, I mean in terms of the end of this session.
It should be the other one at 4:30, right?
18. I mean, I think we wrap up in the next few minutes, or am I an hour off?
Well, actually, the plenary starts at 5, and this is supposed to finish at 4:30, and then maybe we can extend it for a few minutes,
but right.
Not much.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think we're coming to a good conclusion right now, because it sounds to me like we have a plan. And we're being supported by our reporters. Our reporters are going to give us all their notes for feedback. They're also going to give us the opportunity to label consensus, rough consensus, minority reports. But if there is other... And I would like to point out that This outline, these bullet points, were primarily Cheryl's, and I think she did a wonderful job on them. But they're not meant to be limiting. If we're as you can see from number 6, which we haven't talked about at all yet, we're entitled to expand upon the bullet points and offer solutions to the extent we can. So we're not going to be outside our jurisdiction if we talk about a few extra things. Any other comments at this point? I think Lance pretty much summarized what we talked about in number 5. Anybody have questions, comments, concerns, or does anybody want to raise anything else at all? Because number 6 suggests that we can raise new points, and we only have a little time to do that. Garth?
Yeah. Maybe we can ask just a really simple question, just to get a rough consensus of how people feel about ICANN living up to its, mandate to be globally accessible, and whether or not people feel that that's the case based on what we've discussed so far. I mean, for example, I would say no, they're not. Anybody else? You want to raise a card, green or red? Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. I can't find my red card
right over there.
I've decided to be constructive, so I lost my red card.
This is just a very simple, rough consensus. Is ICANN living up to its mandate to be a globally accessible organization? Halfway?
Yes, Roberto.
For me, if I had cards, I would give the red card, but I would qualify this with an acknowledgement that indeed, in the 15 years, there has been progress. I don't like to just to make a so. We ICANN has done a lot of progress, but it's not enough.
Then let me rephrase the question: should ICANN take steps to improve its globalization efforts? Yes or no?
Green. Green. A full consensus. Better. Yasuji, did you have a comment? I couldn't tell if you had. No, did you? Did you have something else to say?
Oh, no.
Okay, Yuri. You had
no, I was just going to recommend rephrasing the question.
Okay. Good. Anything else?
Let me take this opportunity to thank everybody for their effort. It's been a long 2 days. I think everybody, I appreciate everybody's time, effort. Everybody stayed focused. Nobody played too much with email. Special thanks to Roberto, our expert, who stayed with us the entire time. We really appreciate you taking the time to be with us and offer your expertise. Special thanks to Carlton and Lance for the work they're about to do, the work they've done, and the fact they'll be doing a lot more work than the rest of us hereafter. And special thanks to Sylvia for reporting for us. So thank you all, and I hope you enjoy the sessions.
Thank you,
and of course, Cheryl, in case she's listening.